Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Christina Rice, librarian and archivist at the Los Angeles Public Library, and we're talking about her book, Mean, Moody, Magnificent, Jane Russell and the Marketing of a Hollywood Legend. Christina, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, I know that you has previously written a biography of Anne Dvorak, but What inspired you to choose Jane Russell?
Well, you know, when the Anne Dvorak book had been this like incredibly personal odyssey. It took about 15 years to write.
Whoa.
When I started it.
Whoa.
Yeah, I was in my early 20s and just didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, the book came out, you know, 15 years later, and it was a passion project, you know, and to this day, I consider myself like the ultimate Anne Dvorak fangirl. Like she is my love. And when the book was finished, you know, it was exhausting. And I just at the time thought, okay, cool. I did this. I wrote this book and that's it. I'm never doing this again because it was insane. And, you know, like once I had a little bit of distance from it, I thought, well, you know, I don't know. I think I'm kind of good at this. Maybe I could do this again. I didn't know who to write about, though, because so many of the stars that I love already were very well documented and had multiple books. And so I went to my publisher, the University Press of Kentucky, and said, you know, I think I might do this again. And I'm not sure who to write about. And they said, have you ever thought of Jane Russell? And I said, why no, I never have. And I'd seen her in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and love her in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. It's one of my all-time favorite movies and performances. I had suffered through The Outlaw because, you know, as a lover of classic film, I thought it was something I needed to see for some reason. But other than that, I just didn't know much about her. And so I was, you know, but she still has a lot of name recognition. I certainly knew.
Well, everybody knows who she is, but most people have not seen films beyond Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
And that was me. I had not seen anything. And when I discovered that nobody had written a book about Jane, except for Jane, she published her memoir in 1985. I said, okay, I think I can do this. And, you know, and I knew she would be the opposite of Anne in that, you know, Anne was really hard to find information on. And you know, she was very an enigmatic character, whereas Jane, starting in 1941, was just hyper-documented.
Well, she was hyper-hyped. I mean, and that's one of the themes of your book is that there's this sort of contrast between the person who's Jane Russell and the way over the top hype, especially for the first part of her career, of this like sort of bombshell star that she just sort of got used to dealing with, but she wasn't happy with it initially.
Now, I don't know that she was ever happy with it, but she certainly learned to live with it. So yeah, like her career was launched on this publicity for The Outlaw, which was like very specifically focused on her breasts. You know,
I thought that was just something that people like sort of exaggerated, but you have documentation in this book, which is, I think Freud would call it psychosexual. I mean, that Howard Hughes was way over the top.
Howard Hughes was so over the top. You know, she was under contract to him for over 30 years.
Oh my God.
Actually had a pretty decent, you know, professional relationship with him. Wasn't without its bumps and contentions. But yeah, he was obsessed with her breasts
her nipples.
And her nipples. Yeah, there's certainly. And how she, you know, how her clothing looked.
Oh my God.
The
details of it that you write about in the book are just like, to the reader, it's like, whoa. But you're saying that she was, I think we're sort of jumping the gun here. I want to talk about her. The weird thing about Jane, as you bring out in the book, is that she was deeply religious, although she didn't belong to any, she was Christian, but not any specific. She was very conservative. And for a lot of people who sort of are like the campness of some of her movies, they are quite upset about the fact that she was very, very conservative. She's a person who derided feminism. And those two things sort of don't fit together well.
No, they don't. And you know, in researching and writing about Jane, it's a little bit maddening and it's a little bit head scratching. Yeah, because she was, you know, a lifelong Republican and considered herself to be very conservative, and it was the complete opposite of what we saw on the screen and how Howard Hughes portrayed her. So I think she found a way to reconcile the two of them. You know, she wasn't somebody who very aggressively pursued a career in film. She just kind of stumbled on it. And when the opportunities came her way, you know, she took advantage of it, but she just never aggressively pursued it. So she just kind of floated her way through her career a lot of the time. But knew her physicality was kind of her bread and butter. And even though she didn't like the way Howard Hughes always presented it, she just said, well, you know, like having the celebrity allotted her to do a lot of other things in her life. And so I think that was how, you know, and for her, it was acting.
Yep.
You know, she knew that what was being presented on screen wasn't the real her. And so she just had a lot of self-confidence and was very self-possessed.
Yeah.
And, you know, ultimately, she seemed to be able to separate the two. Like, maybe not everybody else could, but she certainly could separate the two.
Well, what I learned from your book, too, is that she had a regular singing career. Just singing in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. She actually had a career singing, and we may talk about that. But that was a surprise to me. And her work about adoption, which was really important, was one of the major things that sort of guided her later life.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, Jane absolutely loved to sing. I think she loved singing more than acting. She developed like a live nightclub act in the 40s. You know, she recorded with Kay Kaiser and went on his radio program in the 40s. And she performed live singing up until the very end of her life. She had a nightclub act at a hotel in Santa Maria where she lived. So she did, you know, she recorded a few albums. She was part of a Christian pop trio with Connie Haynes and Beryl Davis. Her first film that she sang in was Montana Belle. It wasn't the first film released that she sang in, because the timeline of her films is just bizarre. But you know, starting with Montana Belle, like, she sang in almost all of her films.
It's amazing.
She absolutely loved it. Yeah.
And the reason you're talking about the timeline of her films has got to do with Howard Hughes. Because no matter what would happen, you would finish the shooting on the film, and somehow the film would be reshot or things would be added. And the film, it would take years before the film was actually released. And that was especially true of The Outlaw.
Oh, yeah. He just, with The Outlaw, he tinkered with it. There were some issues with the production code administration, with censorship issues. Not as much as legend had, you know, like the myth of censorship in The Outlaw, I think has just grown and grown and grown, and it wasn't that bad. He held on to it for years. You know, he was also sidelined with the war because he was, you know, an aerospace manufacturer. And he just felt like the longer he held on to this film, the more anticipation will build. And so, you know, it took almost a full decade to be released widely. So, it premiered in San Francisco in 43. It had a limited release through United Artists in 46, not widely released until 50 through RKO. And then, with like Montana Belle and Double Dynamite, he just pulled them out of circulation and shelved them for a few years. And then, he did tend to tinker with her film. So it's bizarre. I think it's interesting and a huge testament to Jane that she ended up having a career at all, kind of, you know, because of Howard Hughes.
It was despite Howard Hughes.
Yeah, I think it was both. But, you know, kind of getting back to the whole celebrity, yes, Jane ultimately became an advocate for adoption, particularly international adoption.
Well, she couldn't have children because of a botched abortion.
Yeah, she had an abortion in 1942, like in the midst of the outlaw push.
Do we know who the father was?
We don't. She, you know, in her autobiography, she does not say. You know, she said that her the man who would ultimately be her first husband thought it was his. She said she wasn't so sure. Her ghostwriter, Jan England, who I was able to interview before she passed away, thought it was John Payne, whose name was dating around that time. But we don't know for sure. And just Jane, if Jane knew, she didn't say who it was. But yeah, it did prohibit her from having children later on. And so she ultimately adopted three kids. But it was, you know, kind of an onerous process. And her the second kid she adopted was from, he was an Irish child from England, and it was just this huge uproar. So she ultimately devoted much of her life to easing restrictions on international adoption through a foundation she founded called WAIF. And I think that was a big reason why she was able to reconcile the image projected, because that celebrity enabled her to really focus so much of her attention and really garner a lot of resources for WAIF, which lasted for over 45 years.
There's so many interesting details that you sort of get lost in your book. One of them is she did study acting for 6 months at the Maria Uspenskaya School of Dramatic Arts. Now, I'm not mistaken, Maria Uspenskaya was this one of the people that starred in The Wolfman?
Yeah, she is.
So that's that sort of, she sort of specialized in sort of aged, like, you know, older, interesting women. She was a gypsy in The Wolfman.
She's also in Waterloo Bridge. Waterloo Bridge. She's the very stern dance instructor.
I can just picture her as an instructor. She would be incredibly strict, I think.
I think she was. I think, you know, because again, Jane was never super ambitious. So I think, you know, Jane kind of drove her crazy. <She's>
like, I can't imagine the two of them together. I just cannot.
You look like you're sleepwalking up there. But now, she did enjoy her time there. There were limited times she did enjoy.
Now, building up the publicity for The Outlaw, of course, were those famous photographs. Those were George Herrell's?
Yes, they were.
The famous haystack photographs, which would literally haunt her for the rest of her life, those photographs.
Oh, yeah. She was getting asked about those, up until the very end. And I think she would just roll her eyes. Because, I mean, when you stop and think about it, like photos that you're taking when you're 20 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and she did like two or three. I think she did two haystack sessions with him. There was a black and white session and a color. You know, this is like a few hours of her life that would follow her, you know, decades after that. But yeah, they are some of the most, I think, famous Hollywood photos ever taken.
Right, they're iconic.
They are, one of the color ones, you know, was altered to reveal much more of her. It was that early photoshopping. Altered and blew up billboard size and displayed all around San Francisco in 1943 when the film premiered. So, you know, when Jane and her mom and her Aunt Ernie are on the train coming into San Francisco, they suddenly see these gigantic billboards of Jane just kind of on hay with a gun spilling out all over the place, which was a lot for all of them to take.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Christina Rice, librarian archivist at the Los Angeles Public Library. We've been talking about her latest book, Mean, Moody, Magnificent, Jane Russell and the Marketing of a Hollywood Legend. Let's talk about the film itself, this big film that was touted as going to be this big. It's a weird movie.
That's a weird movie.
And I don't mean that in a good way. It's like,
no.
It's a strange film.
It is a strange film, The Outlaw. And I think there are people who like it. I haven't met any of them personally.
There are people who like anything. So.
There are people who like anything. You know, it was a film that originally was going to be directed by Howard Hawks. And, And he did direct the opening, the opening scenes, which you can tell because the performance by Jack Butel, who plays Billy the Kid, I think at the beginning of the film is quite good. And then and then he walks off the film and Howard Hughes takes over and the film just gets progressively weirder. And you know, Jack and Jane's performances get progressively stiffer. And, you know, there's really a love triangle between, you know, Thomas Mitchell and
wow,
you know, Walter Britt. You know, I don't know if Howard Hughes meant it, but it's pretty. Even back in the day, there were like reviews going, "Hey, what's going on between these three male characters? Between, you know, like Billy the Kid and, you know, Pat Garrett and Doc Holliday, and, you know, Jane's just kind of this weird afterthought." It is a bizarre film. I think it's hard to get through.
But it's interesting, Jane, how many of her early films are sort of strange, that the plot just ends up getting strange, like His Kind of Woman, which was with Robert Mitchum, Raymond Burr, and Vincent Price. I happen to love Vincent Price in that movie. He's a hoot.
he's an absolute hoot in that movie, but I don't know that he belongs in that movie.
No, he doesn't belong in that movie at all. But the only reason I watched that movie is for Vincent Price.
Yeah.
But her relationship, what was the story between her and Robert Mitchum?
I mean, they just got along great. You know,
so is that as far as it went? Because she's written that she had the hots for Robert.
Yeah, I think she did. I don't know if it went beyond. I mean, I certainly speculate. There was a gentleman, Lawrence Williams, who's a huge Jane Russell fan, and he contacted me when I was working on the book. And so we talked about her a lot. And he said, in Jane's book, she references a fling she had, and she calls the person Lance, but doesn't. You know, that obviously is a false name for this person. And Lauren speculated that maybe it was Mitchum, that maybe she did have a fling with him. And there were a few, and I quote in the book, like, there were a few things she kind of said way later on in life, I think after Mitchum had passed away, that, you know, infers that she certainly had the hots for him. So whether it went beyond that, I don't know. They were great friends, though, up until the end of Mitchum's life. At one point, they didn't live too far away from each other. And they were just great on screen together.
They really were. That works.
Yeah, it does. And when she was asked about it later on, like, why do you think that the two of you were so great on screen? She said, you know, we look like we deserved each other.
Yeah, he could be a very difficult person to work with, I can imagine. And they just sort of hit it off, and it's a believable romance between the two of them on the screen.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I think like on Macau, you know, Joseph von Sternberg,
yeah,
the director, and I think Mitchum was difficult to say the least because he couldn't stand him, but always, yeah, just got along great with Jane.
Let's talk about her real life relationship with Robert Waterford. When did that begin? That began really a long time before. Was it while she was in high school or something?
Yeah, they went to Van Nuys High School together. He was two grades above her. So she met him when she was 14 and became completely enamored with him at that, you know, as like only a 14-year-old can. They didn't actually start dating till she was 18. And they had kind of an on-again, off-again relationship, as he was. He went to UCLA and started playing football with them. And then as she started developing her film career, but they got married in 1943 and were married until the late 60s. And he, you know, Robert Waterfield ended up becoming a Hall of Fame football player with the Rams. And they had a very, you know, contentious relationship.
Oh, yeah. That often went to violence.
Yeah, I mean, she, in her autobiography, Jane certainly, you know, references a couple of instances, you know, of domestic violence at the hands of Waterfield. Like, when in Las Vegas, they got into a fight, and, you know, she had to make public, she was there to promote Las Vegas Story, and so she actually, like, had to make public appearances with a swollen jaw and a black eye, which, you know, the RKO publicity said, like, a car door had hit her in the face. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. I feel like it was a relationship that was very rooted in kind of animal magnetism and mutual attraction. They kind of remind me of Stella and Stanley Kowalski in a way.
Yeah. She's scratching his face with a fork, too. I mean,
that same evening she had in public grabbed a fork and scratched his face with it. Not that that kind of thing happens often, like that was, you know, that the very extreme case was in Las Vegas, but I think they also, you know, they had like similar backgrounds. They grew up in the San Fernando Valley, so they kind of had that in common that kept them together. I think they also probably liked the idea of the movie star and the football player, which seemed, you know, on the surface, like very ideal. But by the late 60s, it had just finally kind of burned itself out.
They actually had a film production company, Russfield, together, right?
They did, yeah. Like Jane had her own production company. So I think a lot of people talk about Marilyn Monroe having her own production company, but Jane launched her own the same year that Marilyn did, and they ultimately produced four films, two of them that Jane was in. So it wasn't a super successful venture, but she certainly doesn't get credit for that.
Was one of them Foxfire?
No, Foxfire was not. The two that Jane's in are Gentleman Mary Brunettes and Fuzzy Pink Nightgown.
That's right. Foxfire, was that still Howard Hughes?
Foxfire is not Howard Hughes. And one of the ways you can tell is that she's not wearing strapless dresses in that. They're all pretty high cut.
I actually think that's one of her better performances is in Foxfire. I actually like that movie a lot.
I love that movie. That, you know, and I had never seen it until I was researching this book. And I think other than Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, Foxfire is probably my favorite Jane performance.
I think it's one of her best performances, too, starring Jeff Chandler, too. And it's got an interesting plot line, and she's really interesting in it. She plays an interesting character.
She does play an interesting character. And, you know, and in the movie, she has a miscarriage in it, which is just not something you see a lot
at that time.
That's not a subject. And one of the things I admire about the film is it takes place like in this small Arizona mining town. And so it should be like a drab looking film. And it's gorgeous. You know, it's the last film to be shot in three strip Technicolor. It's like this gorgeous film, and they just take advantage of color. And
the costumes
are incredible. So I think, that film is definitely worth seeking out.
Scuba! Exclamation point. That was the last film she made with Howard Hughes.
And underwater. Underwater! Exclamation point. Yeah, that was the last. You can tell that he was kind of stepping away because in that film she has a scene and it's on a boat and she does wear bathing suits in it and there's Jane in a bathing suit on all of the advertising. There's a scene where she's wearing a nightgown and it is like this very just conservative like kind of grandma nightgown that she wanted to wear, and it just you could tell Howard Hughes was stepping away from film production at that time
because he didn't design it for her.
He didn't, and the designer on that film, Michael Wolff, had worked with Jane in many films and had worked with Howard Hughes and knew what Howard wanted and had started designing like a negligee. And Jane said, no, I want a nightgown. And he's like, okay, and designed it and it somehow got through. So that's how you can tell how involved Howard Hughes was in the film based on Jane's clothing.
In the 1953 Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, with Marilyn Monroe, how did she get along with Marilyn?
Oh, she got along great with Marilyn. She absolutely adored Marilyn. At the time, Marilyn was still, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes ended up really being like Marilyn's, superstar breakout role. But when it was filmed, Jane has top billing in that. Jane's name is first. The red carpet was rolled out for Jane. And early on in the production, Marilyn started showing up to the set late. And it was sheer nerves. Marilyn would get to the studio at the crack of dawn to be made up. Jane, on the other hand, valued her sleep. So Jane managed to figure out her routine and had her people where she could like roll out of bed and get there like an hour before. And so Marilyn's makeup artist didn't want Marilyn to be arriving to the set late and wasn't sure what to do. So he went to Jane's makeup artist and said, hey, Marilyn's here. She's ready to go. She's just super nervous and can't like get herself out of the dressing room. And Jane found out about it. And Jane said, okay, I'll deal with it. And so Jane would just every morning she would go knock on Marilyn's dressing room and just say, okay, Blonda, let's go. Time to go. And Marilyn would stumble out and they would walk to the set together. And there was never, Jane just, kind of, particularly with that movie, what you see on screen is kind of what you had with Jane. Like she was very no nonsense.
Yep.
She wasn't a diva.
Yeah.
She wasn't the type where, she was the last one to arrive to the set. So she knew that Gentlemen Prefer Blondes was a great opportunity. She was finally getting the chance to work with Howard Hawks. So she just was a big sister to Marilyn and got her on the set and guided her along, and the two of them just got along wonderfully. And it shows. I think they have incredible, you know, yes, Jane had a great chemistry with Robert Mitchum and with, you know, with Bob Hope and with Clark Gable. Man, I think she has like off the charts chemistry with Marilyn.
I totally agree.
So great. They're so great together.
Now, what I love about books like this is when I read the author's description of odd films. And there's one in this book, Cauliflower Cupids, 1970. I read your descriptions, and I feel like I need to watch it.
You do need to watch that film. I really like that film. It is an oddity.
Oh my God! It sounds odd.
Super odd. It is super odd. And Peter Savage, he like wrote and directed and starred in it. And it stars a bunch of like boxers. Like Jake LaMotta is the one, you know, who's the subject of Raging Bull. He's in it. And yeah, it is a very 60s film. So it didn't get released, I think, until like 1970. It was shot shot like around 66. It's very 1960s. So for people that love that 60s aesthetic, like,
oh yeah, like flower power in Paisley, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, like very kind of like 60s mod.
Okay.
Yeah, 60s mod. It's super bizarre. You know, Jane shot it. It was shot in New York, and I think she shot it this is when her marriage was just really falling apart, and she just shot it to get away. You know, I think she had to provide her own wardrobe because there's this gorgeous blue dress that she wears in it that you just see her wearing at lots of other events. Jane brought her own wardrobe. She's gorgeous in it, though, and it's kind of a fun film, and Peter Savage's daughter, Paula Petrilla, has been like working to restore it, and I think she's getting ready to release it. I'm hoping I can arrange a screening of it here in Los Angeles.
Oh wow, I think
it would just be fun. I think it would be a hoot.
I definitely want to see this. We're completely out of time. We could be talking about so much more. A lot is crammed in this book. It is a fascinating biography. I never thought I would get so fascinated by Jane Russell. But I did, and it was really, it was the whole person she was, not just the sort of va-va-va-boom Jane. All our other stuff was really fascinating in her life. My guest tonight has been Christina Rice, librarian, archivist at the Los Angeles Public Library, and author. And we're talking about her book, Mean, Moody, Magnificent! Jane Russell and the Marketing of a Hollywood Legend. Thank you so much for your time, Christina. This was a really fascinating book. I enjoyed it immensely.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.